we've learned anything from these past couple of years, my fellow Americans, it's that personal medical freedom and liberty are in crisis. America Out Loud Pulse brings together the top experts in healthcare-related fields to keep you a beat ahead.
Welcome, our wonderful, wonderful audience, to America Out Loud Pulse, a beat ahead. This is the show that, on the platform of America Out Loud, 5 days a week, presents you at 5 p.m. in the afternoon with some of the most fabulous commentary there is available now. And we are the Breggins, Peter R. Breggin with an MD, hard-earned, stuck at the end of it, and Ginger Ross Breggin, who has all the really good ideas.
Or at least, thank you, Peter.
Or at least a lot of the good ideas. And we're just really excited to be working together as this team. I mean, it's those of you who are following us can see the maturation of the marriage after 40 years before your eyes as we work together in public and not just in private. And by the way, if you don't believe in conspiracy theories, Ginger and I have been conspiring against evil since we were children. And boy, there's a conspiracy.
Yep, that's right.
That's really absolutely true. Now, today, by popular acclaim, that's me and Ginger, we're having Alex Newman on the show. I did another show with Alex just a few weeks ago, and it was my TV show.
Your TV show.
And which also goes out on the radio. And that the TV show, by the way, we hardly ever mention it here, is on Brighteon on it's played 6 p.m. on Wednesday nights live on Brighteon TV. And Alex Newman just educated me for an hour. We had an amazing discussion. He's an award-winning journalist. He's an educator. He's a speaker, investor, consultant. I mean, I'd like to take a little time, some point to ask him what to do with my money. He might have some ideas. We don't have a lot of it, but like everybody else, we don't know what to do with it anymore. He's a contributor to Epoch Times, which I think is just amazing, makes me envious, although I don't have any more energy. He's a correspondent for Law Enforcement Intelligence Brief. He is senior editor of the New American Magazine. This is what journalists are supposed to be. They're supposed to educate you with wonderful new ideas. Alex, welcome back. I'm just so glad to be talking to you again.
Hey, it's truly an honor to be here. Thank you so much for having me, and thanks for all you guys do.
Well,
thank you.
We're just doing our best. Now, we're going to have a really interesting show today. It's going to be a ton of breaking news and new insights. And I want to start with a new insight. I was sitting at breakfast with Ginger, and we were chatting just a few hours ago or less. And I was thinking more about my reading and thinking about China and how, you know, China now people really are learning about it. All this is in our original book, though. We're working on another book, but it's all in the COVID-19 and the global predators. We are the prey. And I was thinking about this unrestricted warfare that China carries out. And then I was thinking about how the Chinese have a principle, a kind of a cynical principle that I do believe Americans just kind of abide by or accept so they don't see it in front of their faces, which is that if a communist makes a friend of you, when you go to China and you're Richard Nixon and the head of China makes a friend of you, he's not really a friend. You're a resource. Friendship apparently is possible among communists, at least they say so, but not between a communist and a non-communist, because otherwise you're a resource. And I'm just working on a new book, and I got a chapter in it about Kissinger and Nixon and the Clintons, the Bushes, the Bidens, John Kerry, McConnell, Feinstein, Pelosi, all of them with their ties to China. And all of them, of course, hating Donald Trump. I mean, just, oh my God, the marshaling of hatred from our top politicians toward Trump. And I realized, well, of course, it's mainly really, it's nothing they say. It's about anti-globalism, that Trump came out against globalism. And it suddenly dawned on me that the Chinese communists had weaponized nearly all our presidents and top officials to undermine the United States by giving our business, our money, our inspiration, allowing them to steal our technology, that our presidents and top officials were literally weaponized against America by the seduction of money, power, corruption, grandiosity. And that just includes that whole list of people. I mean, all of them, I don't know about Nixon. I haven't looked at whether Nixon had any investments in China, but all the others, I mean, Kissinger is still a leading investor in China. The old boy is still a consultant getting people money out of China. So I thought I'd just start with that because Alex Newman has been doing this kind of thinking maybe two decades before I, even though he's very young and before compared to us. And I wondered what he thought about the concept and his own work. So let me give that over to you in a minute. But the other thing we're going to talk about today is how agriculture is being taken over and weaponized there too by the globalists.
It's under attack.
Well, agriculture is under attack, but they're going to weaponize food.
Oh, yes, against us.
Against us.
Right.
And we'll get into that. And it's a lot under the Chinese influence, but it comes most directly from the globalists on the West, what I call the Western Empire globalists rather than the Eastern, are just directly. And we'll talk about what's happening to the Dutch in that regard. So, Alex, please take over on this issue. Am I exaggerating to say they've weaponized our presidents, our top politicians against us?
No, you're not. You're not, Peter. And in fact, I think you hit the nail on the head. And I've been exploring this for a very long time. In fact, Communist China has been one of the primary focuses of my journalistic work going back to when I was still in college and even fresh out of college. Some of my biggest investigative pieces early on were focusing in on Communist China. And as it so happens, you and I both participated last weekend at the Red Pill Expo. My talk was about Communist China. It was called Communist China, the Model for the New World Order. And what I showed is that going back to the very beginning, there has been this sort of symbiotic relationship between the Communist Chinese Party and the globalist movement, the deep state, if you will, in the Western world. And that extends all the way back to the Communist Chinese takeover of mainland China. In fact, it goes back even further than that. If you go really to the origins of communism and their major successes, what you'll find is that at every step of the way, there has been major deep state support from powerful interests in the West. One of the men that I consider to be one of America's greatest historians, Anthony Sutton, he was a historian at Stanford University. He did a phenomenal job of exposing this. He wrote a book called Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution. And what he showed is that major American banks and corporations funded the Bolsheviks. They funded Lenin. They funded Trotsky with millions of dollars for the purpose of overthrowing Russia and bringing it under their control. Later, and I exposed this in great depth in my talk, they helped Chairman Mao to enslave Communist China. They actually betrayed a very strong U.S. ally, Chiang Kai-shek, who fought alongside of us in World War II. In fact, my granddaddy fought against Japan in World War II, and he was fighting alongside Chiang Kai-shek's forces. And yet subversive elements within our government, people like George Marshall, who ended up as Secretary of State, top military official, betrayed Chiang Kai-shek. They actually put an arms embargo on Chiang Kai-shek, who was a very liberty-minded individual. He wanted to create a constitutional republic in China. He was a Christian, and he abhorred communism. They put an arms embargo on him while Stalin was taking weapons that he had gotten basically thanks to the U.S. government, thanks to subversive U.S. policy, was sending those weapons to Chairman Mao. So they ensured that Chairman Mao would rise to power in China. And at every step of the way, they have been building up communist China, just like they built up the Soviet Union. Anthony Sutton explained how the technology in the Soviet Union came out of the Western world. He did a three-part series called Western Technology and Soviet Economic Development, where he showed that there was a deliberate effort by subversives running some of America's largest corporations and even in government to build up the Soviet Union. They did the same thing with communist China. And with communist China, they were even more open about it. This is one of the things that's so incredible. David Rockefeller in the early 1970s went over to China. This was before, years before we had even acknowledged the communist Chinese government as a government. And he went over there and he came back and he wrote in the New York Times. This was in August of 1973, and you can still find it in the New York Times archive. This is a direct quote from his op-ed. It was called From a China Traveler. He said, "The social experiment in China under Chairman Mao's leadership is one of the most important and successful in human history." And so this relationship between the deep state in the West and the communist Chinese is very deep. And at this point, it's out in the open. And my conclusion is that the communist Chinese and the globalists, the Western deep staters, people like Klaus Schwab of the World Economic Forum, people like the Rockefellers, people very much like the Henry Kissingers of the world, are working with the communist Chinese to bring about this totalitarian global model that they frequently describe as the New World Order. George Soros actually said in 2010, I've got the video, I played it at the Red Pill Expo. He said in 2010 that the communist Chinese need to own, is the word he used, they need to own the New World Order in the same way that the United States owned the previous order. And he actually said, and this came out of the Globe and Mail when he was getting the Globalist of the Year award from the Canadian International Council, he said, today China has a more, not only a more vigorous economy, but actually a better functioning government than the United States. And so, very much like with Stalin, out of Stalin's top 34 deputies, I think only three died a natural death. I'm confident that there will be power struggles between the globalist deep staters, the Klaus Schwabs, the Rockefellers of the world, and the communist Chinese. But for now, I think it's crystal clear they're working together. They have this ideology. They want to supplant the United States as the global hegemon, the most powerful nation in the world, because it's based on these ideas of God-given rights and limited government and rule of law. They want to replace that with the communist Chinese system at a global level.
Eric Newman, all I have to do is ask you a question and I get an education. That's amazing. I actually did not know about Klaus Schwab in 2010. So how do I get that? How do we get that where he is talking about making China the, the head of globalism?
Oh, that was George Soros.
George Soros. Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that video is very easy to find. That particular clip that I mentioned, that is in an interview that he did with the Financial Times. And actually, if you wanted, I could real quickly share my screen and I could play that video for the listeners out there. They can at least hear George Soros's voice if you'd like me to.
Sure. We've got 4 minutes before the break. Is it shorter than that?
Yes, it's only about 30 seconds. I just need permission to share my video and I'll absolutely be very happy to put that out. So
does that mean I need to give you permission?
Yeah, you need to give me permission. Yeah, it says host has disabled participant screen sharing. And I've got a ton of videos and evidences like this while you guys work on that. They've just been so clear. Bill Gates is, of course, very close to the communist Chinese. Justin Trudeau, he was asked what government he admires more than any other. And incidentally, he said communist China. So it's truly, truly incredible. Here we go. Let's see. Oh, it just allows me to share my video. So maybe after the break, we can come back to that. But yeah, it's just amazing to me how open they've been about this. And of course, David Rockefeller, who I mentioned, was thrilled with the communist Chinese model. He admitted in his autobiography, this is on page 405, it's called Memoirs. He said, some even believe we're part of a secret cabal working against the best interests of the United States, characterizing my family and me as internationalists and of conspiring with others around the world to build a more integrated global political and economic structure, one world, if you will. He says, if that's the charge, I stand guilty and I'm proud of it. So here's a guy who thinks the communist Chinese revolution was the most successful social experiment in human history, admitting in public that he's conspiring against his own nation with a secret cabal, is the term he uses, to bring about a one world economic order and political order. So when you listen, these people are remarkably transparent about what they're doing.
You do such a good job of putting all these gems together. I really, really appreciate what you're saying. So folks, it's really true. And the our leadership has been so bizarrely taken in by the lust for money, the lust for power. So many of our leaders, obviously the Bidens, but also the Bushes, deeply invested through their children or their cousins or their uncles, their friends in China. And this is why they turned against Trump. I really want folks to know this. It's not because Trump's a blowhard. It's not because Trump comes across in ways that are, you know, not as subtle or something as, you know, if you live to be a politician or a professor. That's not what's going on. And he's certainly not a racist. What's going on was that Trump was anti-global, announced it so, and in doing so, took on this whole group of that, going back to the Nixon and Kissinger line and the Clintons and the Bushes and the Bidens and the Kerrys and, you know, Nancy and McConnell and Feinstein and so on, all these people with investments and allegiance to China. And then these amazing quotes, some of which I had not heard before, which is always amazing to talk to Alex. Some I had, of course, that we've been captured. The China captured our politicians. And this is how they do warfare. It's called unrestricted warfare. Everything, including supposed statesmanlike meetings, including friendships, it's all weaponized.
And they want to silence Trump because he believes in America. He believes in our nation and in liberty and the rule of law. And they want to, these globalists want to demolish nationalism altogether. And that's what we're seeing again and again. Alex, we're at the end of our first segment and we're going to take a quick break and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
Here on America Out Loud, we emphasize optimal health, and air is the most essential element for life. The average person inhales over 35 pounds of air every day. Yet we seldom think about how to rid the air of pathogens swiftly and safely when we need to. The Genesis Fogger Plus HOCL is the only way to quickly and naturally restore air to its optimal condition. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud for a free ebook on everything you need to know about HOCL and receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
The spirit of American liberty and justice is woven into the soul of America Out Loud. Now we invite you, friends, to invest some of your time with our magnificent family of experts, their minds and voices. It's all back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
Many Americans worry about their health four times a day. That's 120 times per month. To minimize the worries, leading nutritional supplement company, Healthy Cell, created Immune Super Boost, an immune supplement that contains full effective doses of science-backed nutrients like vitamin C, zinc, elderberry, and echinacea, all in a one-a-day, pill-free, ultra-absorption ingestible gel. Supporting a strong and resilient immune system can be simple. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code America50 for 50% off any order of Immune Super Boost. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code America50 for 50% off.
Well, welcome back to America Out Loud Pulse with Peter and Ginger Breggin and Alex Newman, who just presented and helped present one of the most concise, poignant, irrefutable descriptions of the capture of America's politicians and America's big trust people like the Rockefellers, and has used them, and they've used China, and they've all been undermining America, even our own presidents. And by the way, one other thought on it, and then we're going to move to a whole new exciting set of disclosures that Alex and Ginger are really on top of. And that is, if it shines a lot of new light, the war on the Ukraine and how Russia was literally set up to have to intervene and start a war because we were accepting more and pushing for the Ukraine to become a part of NATO, which would be like, you know, well, it happened when the Russians tried to put the missiles in Cuba. We went to the brink of atomic war to stop them.
Well, what would we do if someone marched into or worked with Mexico and ended up 10 miles from the border of the United States, the southern border, set up various armaments and so forth? We would be apoplectic, or at least we would have in the past.
We would have in the past.
I don't know what it would be.
No, I mean, it's very clear. It's more complicated because as our own people go global. So from the beginning, it now helps explain why they picked Putin to make believe there was work between the Russian and Trump, and all the work was actually between the Russians and the Democrats. Getting all that information, and even Ukrainians were involved in attacking Trump. And that is that Putin is an anti-globalist. And so is Trump, but they come from different directions. Putin's a violent, dangerous empire builder of his own, who wants to have something separate from China and the Western globalists. So he's against Eastern and a Western globalist in terms of wanting his own power. And so if they tied the two of them together, every lie they told about Trump relating to Putin took down the two top anti-globalists in the world. So that was an insight for me, and I haven't seen anybody else talking about that. Okay, now we go to a whole new subject, which is food and agriculture.
Well, it's actually tied in a little tiny bit. Let me just plug in that tiny little bit.
I think it's going to be a big
deal. And that is that there's an attack on our food, because how do you control human beings and populations? One of the best ways to do that is to make people hungry. And then you offer them the only food available, and you can manipulate the food. You can withhold it. You can give some as rewards. And in the future, at least, what's being developed at this point in time is an ability to insert vaccines and other things into our food. There are already experiments being done to develop lettuces and other greens that could contain vaccines. So you could eat your vaccines in the future, which is not a good idea. So there's this desire to control populations through food. And one of the biggest breadbaskets in the world is the Ukraine. And two of the largest suppliers of fertilizer, which is what helps food to grow in the quantities that it's essential, are Ukraine and Russia. And all of that has been disrupted by the Russian-Ukraine war at this point in time. So there's already a great deal of pressure upon both the food growing and the food supply lines and the materials needed to grow food in other parts of the country, such as the Americas and Europe and so forth, because of the lack of fertilizer. This is already causing a great deal of food shortages, and in some place, famines are beginning already. Alex, why don't you take it from there and talk about what's happening in the Netherlands and other places and how that ties in?
Well, thank you, Ginger. And this is a story that, I've been covering for over a decade, and I've just been putting the pieces together. This is not something that's new, and it's not something that's unique to the Netherlands or the United States. In fact, I've been collecting pieces of this story for so many years now, and it looks a little bit different in every country. In Brazil, under the previous communist regime, they never were able to fully implement communism, but the leaders were absolutely communist. They were literally moving entire villages off of their land. They were shutting down hundreds of thousands of hectares worth of agricultural production. And their excuse, and we actually had exclusive reports on this. Nobody outside of Brazil was covering this. The excuse was that they were going to give this land back to some Indians who apparently hundreds of years ago, you know, their ancestors might have lived there. Well, I actually called up the chief of the Indians who was supposed to be receiving all this land. And he said, "That's not our land. That's never been our land. In fact, we don't even exist in that kind of ecosystem. We're Indians of the forest, not of the Cerrado, which is kind of a savanna area." He said it was ludicrous that the government was just using that as a pretext to steal all this agricultural land from the farmers. And it was so tragic. You had military forces and police. Some of them were actually wearing UN insignia. They were wearing UN helmets. And we've got the pictures forcing little villagers. I mean, these dirt poor people who don't have a pot to pee in, forcing them to dismantle their own homes, load it up into the back of carts and trucks and ship it into the city so they could go set up in the slums. It was one of the most heartbreaking things I'd ever seen. Then you look at South Africa. You've got the former president, when he was the president of the country, Jacob Zuma, singing in front of giant crowds that we need to shoot the farmers. Bring me my machine gun. We're going to shoot the Boers. I mean, I've got the videos of these people, the leaders of the country, encouraging an unstable, volatile population that's already, you know, tearing itself apart to go out and start murdering farmers. And so what happens? They start murdering farmers. Thousands and thousands of commercial farmers have been murdered in the most brutal of ways. For years now, they've been talking about expropriation without compensation. So in South Africa, it's under the guise of redistributing the wealth, you know, straight
right,
communism.
It's racially connected, I think, isn't it?
That's right. Yep. They're stirring up hatred against, they call them settlers, even though in many cases, the European descendants of the Dutch have been in those parts of South Africa far longer than the Black Africans who came down. So they're stirring up racial resentment and trying to steal the farms. And again, these are some of the most productive farmers on the face of the planet. They literally feed Africa. In China, again, it looks different. They're herding villagers. And, you know, hundreds of millions of Chinese villagers live on small agricultural plots of land where their families have been farming for centuries, maybe millennia. And the government has now started building these mega cities, these nasty smart cities, tiny apartments. And they actually said this publicly. Look, we can do this the hard way or the easy way. The easy way, we'll give you a little bit of money. We'll give you an apartment in these cities and you leave the land. The hard way is we're going to force you to do it. So they came out, they made this crystal clear. I wrote the article in 2013. They started herding millions of Chinese farmers off of their land into these controlled mega cities. In the United States now, we see this new SEC rule to force small and medium-sized farms to report all their emissions. I mean, these people can hardly keep up with their farm, right? They're waking up before the sun comes up and they're going to bed when the sun goes down because they got to handle their farm. Now they're being expected to report their climate emissions and they're all saying this is going to bankrupt us. You've got the same situation going on in Mexico. Now we see in the Netherlands, they want to expropriate these farms. They want to shut down the farmers. They want to cull these herds. And so what's happening here is an agenda that's been in place for a long time. And I want to circle back to Henry Kissinger for a moment. Back in 1974, he put out the National Security Memo 200. It was classified at the time. He was serving as National Security Advisor. Today, it's unclassified. And I encourage people to go read it. He argued that there's way too many people on the planet, that these growing third world populations are a threat to U.S. national security, and that the solution, one of the solutions, was to encourage these governments to start imposing population control on those people and encouraging sterilization and abortion and contraception and other means to bring their populations under control. And he says very clearly and very specifically, food can be the lever to make this happen. We can use food as a weapon to get these governments to impose the population control policies we want. And then you go to Agenda 2030. This is much more recent. 2015, they adopted this. And actually, goal number two deals with food. And they say we need sustainable food. They say we got to totally rearrange production and consumption. Well, they actually gave the game away in 1976 in the run-up to the original Brundtland report that outlined the whole concept of sustainability. They actually had a meeting, took place in Vancouver in 1976. And if I can find the quote, I'm going to read it to you because it was just so revealing about what their agenda was. See if I can pull that up. Yeah, here it is. So this was, again, 1976. This was the predecessor. They had several of these sustainability meetings before they came out with the big report, Our Common Future, where they first laid out this vision for sustainable development. And this is what they said in the official report, direct quote here, I'm reading it. Land cannot be treated as an ordinary asset controlled by individuals and subject to the pressures and inefficiencies of the market. Private land ownership is also a principal instrument of accumulation and concentration of wealth, therefore it contributes to social injustice. The ultimate goal is to kick the small and medium-sized farmers off their land, put all land under the central control of this fascistic public-private partnership with the big corporations and the government in bed together, because just as you said, Ginger, if they control the food supply, they control you, and you will do anything to make sure your children don't starve, including give up your property, including surrender to a world system, whatever it is they demand. If your kids are starving, you'll do it, and they know it.
It's true.
Honey, do you want to start connecting it to what's going on in Holland?
Right. Well, actually, Alex, you've got the big picture, and it's fascinating to hear how far back this goes. I've come to this lately, and what I found first was on social media pictures of huge numbers of large farming equipment lined up blocking and blockading freeways in the Netherlands. And I mean, the pictures have been stunning the last several weeks. Hundreds and hundreds of tractors lined up in either direction, completely blockading highways in and out of the Netherlands and to Germany and other places. And then also blockading city halls, dumping manure and other things like hay bales in front of city halls where the oppressive policies have been being issued. The basic issue in Holland has been that there have been declarations that a large amount of nitrogen emissions need to be cut within certain deadlines leading up to 2030. And it's all attributed to these 2030 goals. But those emissions are impossible to reach without actually seeing a complete deterioration of product from the farms. The farmers cannot exist with these emission goals. The only way that those emission goals get met is if the farms become completely unproductive. This has been shown now. I just heard over the last couple of days in a couple of other countries in Sri Lanka and what was it? Was it Ghana? Do you know, Alex? Was it Ghana? Two other very small countries that attempted to meet their emission requirements, where the various greenhouse gas emissions were restricted and cut back in the agricultural sector. And what happened is they met their requirements, their goals for emissions cutting back, but their people are starving and they have had complete uprisings in Sri Lanka over the last week. There have been those astounding pictures of absolute out of control mobs mobbing the prime minister's palace and partying in it for 24 hours or so, and ultimately setting it on fire as the prime minister boarded a plane and fled the country.
Yeah, and I think we see in Sri Lanka what will happen if these anti-agriculture policies are pursued. They basically pursued all these silly green policies that were cheerleaded by the green establishment, by the UN, and by all these so-called eco-warriors to quit using fertilizer. I mean, you could go back to basically traditional farming techniques, which, of course, cannot support a large population. Right. And I think we see in Sri Lanka also something very dangerous, right? Because they recognize the elites, the predator class, as you call them, Dr. Bragan, recognize that these policies are going to result in an uprising. When people are hungry, they revolt. And so what they want to do is they want to steer the revolt in the direction of knocking down your own nation, destroying your own national institutions to pave the way for globalism. And so, you know, I think the farmers in the Netherlands are doing a great job right now. You know, they've got public support and they need to keep that public support. And they need to make clear that this is not an attack on the Netherlands. This is not an attack on the Dutch democratic system of government. It's an attack on the hijacking of those systems, because I think what we'll see if the food supply gets cut off, and we're headed to a food crisis, there's no doubt about it, is that they will try to manipulate the protests and the uprisings into an effort to just demolish that nation's institutions. And that's what we have to be very careful of. And I think that's what's happening in Sri Lanka right now.
Right. I agree.
That is just so very, very clear, the way the two of you are describing it. Ginger, one of the things that you researched that was very remarkable, is the connection between what's happening to the Dutch and the stepping stone to globalism called the European Union, as well as the UN, which we've been talking about. And you found some documents from several years earlier where they were actually planning between the World Economic Forum and the EU. That can you tell us a little more about that? Not much more, huh?
Well, I can chime in there because I've been
okay, please.
So the European Union came up with this idea. They call it a Natura something, where they wanted to preserve certain types of ecosystems. And they looked at the Netherlands and they said, oh, look, there's some like clove, you know, grass or whatever, and some hay.
Yes.
Isn't that wonderful? And so the Netherlands actually partnered with the World Economic Forum to create one of these food innovation hubs. And so the pretext, you know, I mentioned earlier, the war on the agricultural community, especially the small and medium farmers and ranchers, takes different shapes in different countries. And so in the Netherlands, they're using the nitrogen pretext. They're using the pretext that they need to preserve these certain types of ecosystems as the excuse to take down the farmers. But what happened last year, the prime minister of the Netherlands, Prime Minister Rutte, partnered with the World Economic Forum as part of this total transformation of the food supply. And so the Netherlands is actually set to be the European hub of the food innovation hubs. That's going to be where the secretariat is based. They almost act like it's a government agency. And so Holland is going to be one of the world headquarters of this effort to transform the food supply. Now, the World Economic Forum is not acting alone, but they are a big part of this. They're working in partnership with the UN for Agenda 2030. And again, they've made clear that the goal is central control of the food supply. And again, the Rockefeller Foundation comes in here, too. In 2020, they actually put out this very bizarre document. I'm looking at it right now. It's called Reset the Table, Meeting the Moment to Transform the U.S. Food System. And so we see this as a global movement, and we've got to resist it.
Yes, thank you. We're going to go to another break, and we'll be right back.
All right, you've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCullough talk about the povidone iodine-based nasal spray Cofix RX. They talk about it because it's a product that actually works in combating colds, flus, and coronaviruses. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. It's simple. By attacking viruses where they incubate, you make it easier for your body to heal. Check out the Cofix RX banner ad on AmericaOutloud.com and save 20%. By using promo code OUTLOUD.
Oral hygiene hasn't changed in 50 years. Brush, floss, repeat. We're told to use fluoride, which doesn't really address the acid-creating bacteria. That is where the dentist-recommended Spry Dental Defense System shines. Spry products contain xylitol, a natural sugar which helps get rid of those nasty, smelly, acid-creating bacteria in our mouth. The best way to care for your teeth and gums is by using Spry. The Spry Dental Defense System has a wide variety of products, toothpaste, mouthwash, mints, and chewing gums that are designed to work together to keep your teeth clean and mouth healthy and smelling sweet all day long. To get your oral care back on track in an easy, effective, and very tasty way, switch to Spry today. Ask your dentist about xylitol and the Spry products. Spry can be found online and at all fine natural product retailers.
Welcome back to, I love it when I just sit back and listen to Ginger chat with someone else and bring out all these materials. One of the things that Ginger's been really looking at and we've been interviewing people about is the vertical farming. And it plays a very interesting role in what's going on. My understanding, and I'll let Ginger fill in, is that in a place like the Netherlands, they'll knock out the farmers, which they're doing, and then they'll build vertical factories that are huge, thousands of feet long, many stories high, and the food supply will be essentially this GMO modified foods of all kinds, in and maybe fake meat, whatever else they want to do, and whatever else they want to feed us themselves, maybe Soylent Green, you know, who knows what they'll come up with. But then what happens is they control the food supply because they control the vertical farms.
Right.
So they've completely shifted farming from individuals owning their farms and contributing to the community. And they've gotten rid of that group that is so individualistic and so much believes in country, not the globe, even though they may sell globally, they still believe in their countries. And instead you replace it with a vertical farm in which you can dole out food however you wish. And then some other things we've been looking into, and again, here Ginger's the spearhead. Then if you can get everybody onto a single digital currency, then you can keep them from buying food if you want to. You just don't allow them to on the digital currency from places that aren't their vertical farming. They can get enormous control over everything that's going on. And Ginger, Alex, we're talking with Alex Newman. Your thoughts on this?
Well, the vertical farming, and Alex, I'll ask you to chime in just a minute. The vertical farming actually replaces the small farmers and the medium-sized farmers in the country. And that's the plan in the Netherlands, is to convert the entirety of the Netherlands into one mega city. And an aspect of the mega city will be industrialized vertical farms, which take up a much smaller footprint and which are completely controlled industrially from the top down instead of by independent small businessmen and women. And that enables the entire country to then be manipulated and controlled in terms of the land mass and what happens to it. And since it's the site of the EU governance and government, and that is the plan through private investors, is to turn the Netherlands into one huge megacity. And listeners, I'll tell you, it's astonishing to look at the maps of this tri-state city, which is being planned. It actually eats up the entirety of the Netherlands and a piece of Germany, a piece of Belgium. It sits there on the edge of the landmass of Europe and opens up a shipping corridor that can go due north straight over the Arctic and opens up a China corridor into Europe, which is hugely shorter and more efficient than their current shipping lanes that go around a lot of landmasses. The other thing that is, well, I think one of the greatest ironies of all is that the reason the shipping lane is opening up in the Arctic is because there's so much melting of the Arctic lanes at this point. The ice masses are melting, allowing ships to go through. So in fact, that melting is of the benefit to, an incredible benefit to the globalists. Alex, go ahead and fill us in further.
Yeah, well, I want to chime in on this issue of the transformation of the food supply, because you're exactly right. They want to move into this vertical farming. And it's even more nefarious than that. We see now Bill Gates, Jeff Bezos, and Al Gore are now major investors in these Frankenfoods. They want to start growing. In fact, they are doing now creating these fake meats in laboratories. Oh. They are openly and deliberately and strategically pushing this idea that we're all going to get our protein from bugs. They're now building the largest insect protein facility, production facility in America, in Illinois, right now, close to Decatur. And they've been promoting this for years. In fact, I wrote an article in, I think it was 2013, when the UN started promoting this idea that everybody was going to have to eat bugs to get protein because cows and other livestock were apparently not sustainable. That's been their plan. I mean, they want to reduce us to the status of serfs. And on this agenda of mega cities, I mean, that's a critical component of this. They want to clear out the open land masses of the world. And we're seeing this happen in America right now, depending on where you go in this country. And I deal with elected officials all over America. If you're out in the rural areas, what the county commissioners will tell you is that there is a deliberate agenda to depopulate their entire county. They're trying to move people out of there and get them sucked into the cities. And it's been a slow process. It's been going on for a long time, but that's the plan. Then you go to other counties, like the county where I live, and it is unstoppable. They're deliberately packing people in here. They're deliberately chopping down every last tree and building these giant buildings. And they want to move everybody into these so-called smart cities.
They're so beehives. They're right. Like beehives and ant hives. I think that there's a lot of admiration for those in the globalists and in China.
Oh, yeah. And the benefits from the predator class's perspective are huge. They can surveil and control everything you do. And I mean, we're talking here about a transformation that is unprecedented in all of human history. There's never been anything like this at all in all of human history. And, you know, people are going to start seeing this turn up in their backyard more and more. And we've got to resist it.
Yeah, we see simple things that show up and it looks disconnected at this point. But every time we have a smart meter installed on a small business or a home, that smart meter that controls and monitors the energy coming into your home or the water or whatever utility is coming into your home, eventually that's going to connect to a central control and it can be tweaked. It can be turned up. It can be turned down. It can be turned off for a couple of hours a day. So smart meters are one way. And all the video and the audio recordings that are available and being installed. I think we get seduced, Alex, into this. We get the fun stuff up front. We get the Apple watches and we get the video doorbells and so forth, and the Alexas into our home, all of that. Right now, we think we run that. Eventually, that's going to run us. I'm just waiting for the moment when our Apple Watches are modified to the point that if we don't walk a certain amount every day, that we don't get as much of our allowance for our food after that. So that
well, Microsoft's already got the patent for that, Ginger. They patented in 2020, WO2020060606. I pulled the patent right from the World Intellectual Property
Organization. Wait a minute. It's 060606.
Yes, it is. I kid you not. And when I first heard it, I couldn't believe it. So I went to the World Intellectual Property Organization's website and there it was. It's a device that attaches to a human being and monitors your body activity to dispense cryptocurrency. If you're doing the thing that the programmers want you to do, like walking, like, you know, whatever it is, you get your cryptocurrency allotment. If you don't do it, you don't get your crypto allotment.
Oh my gosh. Yep. And I think we're being spoofed with the 060606 stuff when things are labeled 666, or as you said, the 06s. I think that's a deliberate poke at those of us. I think it's done in some way to make us look weird if we notice it and comment yep. on it and so forth.
It's like, just a coincidence. What's wrong with you, right?
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh.
Well, this is turning out to be, I think, one of the most interesting programs I've ever participated in on the cutting edge issues of globalism. And that's where Alex is, and that's where Ginger is. Ginger and I are, we kind of divide up things, and Ginger does a lot of this stuff that you're hearing being talked about right now. It I'm just really sitting here a little bit with my mouth open at what you guys have at your fingertips.
Well, I'm just a sponge. Alex has got the details.
Alex, we have seven, 8 minutes left. I want to make sure you get to say everything you want about this. Is there another piece of this that you want to talk about?
Yeah, we've talked a lot about the different vehicles that are being used to advance this agenda, but I think we have to mention what I consider to be the most important one of all, and that is the so-called educational system. And really, referring to it as an educational system. But yeah, Obama famously called us bitter clingers, right? We're clinging to our guns and our religion, and you know, so they've kind of dismissed the older generations, and they're focusing now on the young. Adolf Hitler understood the importance of that. Lenin, Stalin, Mao, they all understood that you need to go after the young people. And this is no different. So if you actually look at their international documents and agreements, they made this very clear. Agenda 21, the first global sustainability agreement that was ratified in 1992, signed by George H.W. Bush on behalf of the United States of America and every other national government signed on, incidentally. They actually tell you in Chapter 36 that the what they consider to be the necessary changes in values and attitudes and beliefs and behaviors are going to have to be brought about through what they call education. And they're very explicit about this. It requires spirituality education. It requires sustainability, they say, to be a critical part of every single subject that is studied in school. So they're going for your kids, folks. Your kids are the primary targets. For us who are, you know, millennials and older, we probably won't see the most horrific components of this, maybe in our lifetime, certainly not anytime soon. But for the younger people, they are now brainwashing our kids and our grandkids into not just, and they actually say this in Agenda 2030, it's not enough just to submit the language in goal number 4 of the Sustainable Development Goals, also known as Agenda 2030. These children have to be so, quote unquote, educated that they will, the word they use is, promote sustainable development. So I think that is the critical weapon that they have at their disposal is the brainwashing and the indoctrination of our children. They should not know their history. They should not know economics. They should not know the traditions and values and beliefs of their parents and their grandparents. Instead, they should know nothing but this sustainable development. It looks very much like the Cultural Revolution in China, right? Everything previous was evil, was horrible. It needs to be brought down. We'll take down the statues. We'll rename the streets. We'll burn the libraries. We'll kill the professors. And then we'll replace all that with the new things. And that's what they're doing to our children right now. And parents, you must be aware.
Do you see the sex education changes and the promotion of trans perspectives and so forth to younger and younger classroom children? Do you see that as mainly being a dividing point to separate these kids from their families in order to further propagandize them?
Yeah. In fact, I think it's even broader than that. I think what you just hit on is a critical part of it, but I think it's even broader than that. The ultimate objective is to dismantle even the concept of a family, right? I like to remind people of this progression because people forget so quickly. Prior to 2001, sodomy was still a crime across much of the United States. So all this is a relatively recent innovation. And we went very quickly from, we just don't want to be discriminated against. We just don't want to be criminalized in our private behaviors in our own bedrooms to now we need to teach your children transgenderism. And so I think the critical thing to understand, the Marxists and the totalitarians have understood from the beginning, the family is a major obstacle to total tyranny. First of all, families take care of each other. And so you really don't have much need for the government to care for you if you have a loving family. Families take care of their members. When one gets sick, the family steps in and pitches in. But even more importantly than that, family is the transmission belt for the values and the beliefs and the culture and the traditions and the religious ideas of previous generations. That's how it gets handed down from one generation to the next. And I think that's why Marx was so hostile to the family. That's why he wanted to get rid of the family. He thought women should be held in common. And that the nuclear family was a bourgeoisie institution that needed to be dismantled, partly because the family's a bulwark, partly because the family transmits the values onto the next generation. And so first with the homosexual movement and the homosexual marriage, they said, well, it's not a big deal to have two moms. It's not a big deal to have two dads, right? I mean, it may not be perfect, but it's better than no parents. Well, now that the transgenderism issue takes it one step further. Now, there is no such thing as a mom. There is no such thing as a father. There's only a birthing person and a lactating person and chest feeding. And so this whole concept of nuclear family needs to be flushed down the toilet. Not only do you not need a mom and a dad to raise a child properly, the whole concept of mom and dad is a social construct that needs to be abolished. And it's, in fact, it's hateful. So this is very clear. It's very strategic. And they're just manipulating people into thinking that this is an issue of tolerance or love. No, it's an issue of trying to destroy the family.
Yeah, I'd like to add a more spiritual aspect to it as well. The family is the source of love. The whole story of family is love, the love between people that is then expressed sexually and that gives birth to infants, the love of a mother for the infant, especially, and the importance of nurturing of that physical contact, which they also want to destroy, the physical contact between the mother and the child, which makes this physical intimacy that builds the growing brain of the child to move toward love. And if you look back, and by the way, I don't see an inherent contradiction between evolution and God. So we can talk about that another time. But whether we believe in evolution or God, I think that there's no question historically that we have been here for a million or 2 years. And we always lived in families, even when we were hanging from trees. And we have lived in families when we were little tiny bipeds running around on the savannas of Africa. We evolved entirely, and you can see it as God's plan evolving, as families. And communism is and totalitarianism and collectivism is a hateful system. It denies love. It denies God. You find nothing about love in Marx. I once challenged a professor, a Marxist, to produce me one thing that Marx said that was loving toward humanity or toward people. And they're loveless. They're hateful. You can't just be loveless, become hateful. So one of the reasons to destroy the family is to destroy the group that will say, you can't do this to us. We love each other. You can't break us up. You can't send us where you want. You can't mistreat us. You can't, one thing we haven't talked about, transhumanism. You can't mutilate us and move us around and change us genetically. I love my child. My child has a genetic defect. I still love my child. I'm not going to abort my child. And that's all about love. Love for individual human beings is being incredibly special. And that's the thing they most want to take away from us. Oh my God, Alex Newman, thank you so much for being with me, Peter Bregan, and Ginger Bregan. It's been a stunning hour together. God bless
us. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate you guys both. Thank you for all you're doing, and God bless you.
God bless you, Alex. Thank you.